Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Amber Rae Show. I am so excited about today's guest because for a while I've been telling you about hidden dangers between the childhood vaccines. And today I talked to a woman and her name is Tracy Slepcevic, and she wrote a book called A Warrior Mom, A Mother's Journey in Healing Her Son of Autism. She is an Air Force veteran and she wrote this book because she did so much research on how she could heal her nonverbal son at 3 years old. He was vaccine injured. And she wanted to address the underlying causes associated with autism. Now her son's 18, he attends college, he drives, he has a bright future ahead of him with no limitations. So I'm excited. I hope you will like, share, and subscribe, especially the show everywhere, far and wide. Well, coming up right now is Tracy. Told you I have Tracy joining us today. I'm so excited, Tracy, to interview you. When I first heard about you, I wanted to have you on my show, but you know what? It all worked out the way it's supposed to, and God has you on now. So welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I want to say thank you for your service. I know you're an Air Force vet, so thank you for that. What did you do in the Air Force?
So I did what they called bioenvironmental engineering. So it was a combination of industrial hygiene and environmental protection. So what I did was each shop had a case file, and we would do all the site visits. We would evaluate the hazards in the workplace, and then we would assign the proper PPE for that workplace. So you can imagine how silly I thought paper masks were.
Well, you know what? My family and I just recently got to go to the base, our local Air Force base, Luke Air Force Base, because they had it open to the public and it was so much fun. Mm-hmm. I got to meet the general of the base, and our favorite part was the Thunderbirds. Have you ever got to see the Thunderbirds fly?
Oh, you have no idea. Every year, an air show, right? So, but that was a day that we had to work regardless. So mm-hmm. We weren't always excited about air shows. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they were annual every year.
Not here in Phoenix, they're every couple of years, but it made such an impression on my kids that they decided they are the Thunderbirds with their bicycles. It's so cute. Yeah. So I want to get into it. You are a mother and your son was diagnosed with autism, and there's a happy ending to your story. So why don't you share with us how you got to cure your son or learn how to cure your son? I don't know if that's the proper even term for it. Walk us through the steps of where you are today with your child versus when he first got diagnosed.
So I don't use the word cured. That's a very touchy subject, and it's one that my son would be upset about. So what I did was I addressed his underlying conditions so I could get him to a functioning state. So he had lost all his speech, some motor skills, a lot of cognitive function. He had baby sign language. He lost that as well. So really digging deep in addressing underlying conditions, because no matter what, you can have a genetic predisposition for anything, but there's going to be some sort of environmental trigger that triggers that gene, as to where we are swimming in a toxic soup. I don't even need to name the multiple ways that these kids, can regress. But in that aspect, it's really good to learn how to remove environmental toxins from the home, to remove them from your environment and your life, and to really move forward. So as people would ask me, what's the number one thing that worked for your child? Mm-hmm. And I say, on the day that my naturopathic doctor came to me and told me that no would be fine, I set a clear intention that Noah would live a normal functioning life. Mm-hmm. And I felt it right down to a cellular level. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to settle for anything less. So as neurologists and doctors were telling me, you know, you need to accept this, you need to move forward. But that wasn't, to me, that wasn't going to be Noah's end all be all. Yes, I went through some things with my son and in the schools and almost every situation after school care, losing my kid and not calling me. I mean, it's an uphill battle when you have a child with special needs. And today, because you asked how he's doing, today he's 18 years old. He is fully functioning. Sometimes he'll use autism to manipulate a situation. But when he's with his friends or behind a computer in his room, he's like, he's just a normal kid. Mm. He can drive. He goes to a junior college. And, you know, he likes being responsible. So he likes taking on things on his own and being independent. So it's baby steps for, I think, any of these teenagers. So he goes to his doctor's appointments on his own. You know, I just make those appointments. He still has a compromised immune system. So I have to always, you know, keep up with it. But, you know, he did give me power of attorney to be able to oversee his medical. Okay. And anytime I make him an appointment, even for, you know, IVs or whatever, he's like, okay, mom. You know, he's such a good kid. I mean, he's a know-it-all teenager, mm-hmm. as there's no cure for that. They say eventually they come back, right? But mm-hmm. overall, he will tell me all the time, you know, mom, I'm truly grateful for everything that you've done for me. And, you know, I might not have the same beliefs as you do, but I do know that you mean well and that you are concerned for my health always. Because now, I mean, the diet's out the window. He does not do gluten-free, dairy-free, or sugar-free. Now that he can get his hands on those things, that's probably all he eats. So, you know, then brings forth other challenges, right? But, you know, he will go work out with a trainer, which is a positive note. So he goes 3 weeks to work out with a trainer. But I remember being his age and, you know, we were so active back then, but I was active and then I still ate garbage.
It's true. We all did.
Yep. So I don't, you know, there's a different phase of their lives. Now, did I turn Noah around with my biomedical intervention? Yes. So after we started cleaning out the gut and addressing, you know, gut issues, leaky gut, and changed his dietary lifestyle, then he started to speak and his functionality got better. We also had to implement supplementation. We did hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And then when he was 7 years old, we took him to the Ukraine for stem cell therapy. And that was 2012. Can't go there now, but it was huge for Noah because he regained a lot of his motor skills. So a kid who couldn't hold on to a monkey bar was going back and forth on the monkey bars.
After the stem cell treatment, that's been really, okay. So
in 30 days, this is what, and it doesn't work this way for every person or child. So stem cell therapy is tricky. It, you know, it works for some, but then it doesn't work for others. And you know, you got your three different types of stem cells. You got your adult stem cells, which are your own. Now, if I could use my son's cord blood and it wasn't FDA regulated, then I would be able to utilize those adult stem cells, which I would recommend over everything. But we had to go a different route. We did fetal stem cells. So it worked really well. So we spent about 6 months boosting his immune system, however it was that we could. And then when we went to the Ukraine, what we wanted was for those stem cells to go and repair damaged tissue and not have to repair the immune system as well. So there was a protocol. And back then it was the Bradstreet protocol. So Dr. Bradstreet, who's no longer with us, you know, designed this protocol for his own children and researched it and wrote a study on it. And, you know, it might've cost him his life for sure. But I can tell you that within 30 days, my son was able to graduate from occupational therapy. So he was able to go back and forth on the monkey bars. He was able to balance on a half moon ball. He was able to swing. He was able to tie his shoes, get dressed on his own, do all these things he couldn't do before. And then when we got back from Europe, we went to the Renaissance Fair. And Noah saw this huge rock wall. Now, we had done rock walls before, and my experience of Noah on a rock wall was he's frozen, he can't move, he doesn't have the strength or coordination to go up, and he would just sit there and cry. I'm like, okay. So I'm like, well, all right, you know, go ahead. And this thing was massive. So Noah gets up there and he just like flies up that rock wall. And he rings the bell, and I literally, I swear to you, I like fell to my knees and I started to cry.
I would too. I would too.
So
that's a huge moment in your life.
Yeah, it was very cool.
So let me go back to when he was a baby. Okay. So when he was a baby, when did you notice the change in your son? Did he bang his head? Did he cry a lot? When did you notice that all happening? Like how old about was your son when you started seeing a change in him?
So 2 months, Noah started to became severely colic. I mean, crying nonstop, not sleeping. Yes, around 6 months, you know, a little bit of the head banging, but he was still functioning normal. He still had motor skills, although his behaviors, and you could tell like that he was in pain. And you know, when it's your child and they can't talk to you, you don't know what to do for them, especially when they're a little baby. So I remember my husband and I doing the whole football hold and kind of bouncing him and just trying to soothe him. And I didn't know much about home remedies or what the cause of these things were or what was going on. So I was very much in the dark. And every time I asked my pediatrician, she's like, oh, it's a normal thing. They'll grow out of it. And as time went on, Noah progressed. He had his baby words. We started learning baby signs at 6 months. And he was doing really good. So he had his little baby sign language. And he crawled early. He walked early. We used to call him our little monkey. And he was just all over the place. And this was prior to a year. So, you know, at his 1 year well baby visit, he got, you know, a clean bill of health. And, you know, he's doing really good. And, you know, it's time for that, you know, those things that come at well baby visits. So
you can say it because I'm not on YouTube.
Okay. So he got his MMR and Varicella vaccine. And from there, within 24 hours, he broke out in a full body rash and had a very high grade fever for about a week. So, today, what doctors say is he probably got measles from the measles vaccine. My pediatrician's response was, oh, this is just a normal reaction. He just has a little rash, head to toe bumps. Like head to toe in a fever for a long time. And to literally like a couple weeks later, they gave him a mild steroid to flush that out, whatever it was. And I can't sit here and say that it was measles, but the guesstimate, because he received the measles vaccine. And a lot of times when people get measles, they get it from the vaccine. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of the general consensus. So from there, once Noah was feeling better, I started to see this slow regression. He lost his, you know, he went from saying mama, dada, buddy, which was the dog, you know, little baby words, mm-hmm. and he had all this sign language, and it went, you know, to ma, da, and to nothing, to absolutely nothing, no speech, no sign language, no nothing. And he would just stare off into space. And I would just keep asking, what's wrong with my kid? Something's mm-hmm. wrong. And I remember the pediatrician telling me when he was about a year and a half old, because he started getting chronic ear infections. This is also a side effect of vaccines.
Mm-hmm. That's true. All like just about all vaccines. Yes, they start getting ear infections. They get sick more than non-vaccinated.
Asthma, allergies, all of it. All vaccinated. Of it. Mm-hmm. And you know, his pediatrician dared to tell me that regression is normal. He'll be fine. And I'm like, huh? Wow. I wouldn't think that. So. Still trusting my pediatrician. I'm do. Then Noah, I'm like, well, he's 2 years old. Maybe he just needs to be put in preschool to, you know, he was, for all intents and purposes, he was an only child. He had a, you know, a half sister, but she was only with us like every other weekend. And so he didn't have somebody to constantly play with or, and I couldn't have children after Noah. So I put him in preschool, and then the first preschool after a few months, you know, called us in for a meeting and said, you know, Noah's not engaging. He's the kid in the corner. He's rocking back and forth. He's got no speech and he won't potty train. And, you know, we really feel like maybe it would be in your best interest to take him to Harbor Regional Center and have him evaluated. And I'm like, okay. So I made the appointment. I scheduled what it was called was a preliminary evaluation. So a therapist will do the preliminary evaluation, not the actual clinical psychologist. And they're supposed to pass on the report to a clinical psychologist, which never got done. What? So after that, she was like so frustrated with Noah because he's just repeating things. So he had echolalia. So at first he had no speech. And then I kept working with him. I was doing like all these little cue cards and stuff. And then he developed what we call echolalia. So it's not communicative language. He can't communicate. But if you say Noah, say red, he says red. So he can process the last word you said and he'll repeat it. But then he would repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. Mm. And so here she's holding up cue cards, say blue, and he's like, blue, 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 you know, and then he's running around in circles and he's flickering on lights. And she was so irritated. And I'm like, why would somebody in this field be so irritated? And then I asked her when the evaluation was done, I said, well, can you give me some insight as to what's going on? And she's like, well, I'm not a clinical psychologist, but he probably has severe ADHD or autism. But, you know, that's not for me to determine. And she walks out and I'm like, wow.
I can't believe that.
When they never contacted me, I was like, good. I don't want to go back there.
Yeah.
So I decided to, Noah was about 2.5 at this point. I decided to take Noah out and I put him in a Montessori school because sometimes Montessori schools make them engage a little bit more. And I'm like, okay, well, let's try a new school. And that went over well. So Noah was there for about, 6 or 7 months. And so Noah's third birthday comes. So I take him in for his well baby visit at 3. And I just asked the question because my sister was in town and she's like, Tracy, can you just possibly take into consideration that maybe Noah could have autism? And I'm like, I'm open to answers. You know, at this point, my kid is not sleeping. He's tantruming. He's banging his head up against the wall. He's spinning in circles. He's checked out. He's, you know, tiptoe walking. He's picky eater, all this stuff, you know, and I just had no answers. So I asked the pediatrician, is it possible that my son could have autism? And she literally looked at him for a hot second and said, nope, he just needs some speech. And I was like, oh, okay, well, the pediatrician must know. So I'm here to tell all parents that pediatricians are not by any means qualified to diagnose any child with autism, ADD, ADHD, or any neurological disorder for that matter. They are programmed as to what to give for, you know, what to prescribe for what ails and how to vaccinate, because they get major bonuses.
Oh yeah. I talked about that.
Vaccinating their children. They get huge kickbacks from Big Pharma.
Huge. It's on my website if you want to look. And it's only what I was able to find on my own. And when I walked, cause I was on the Reawaken tour in Missouri, and I talked about childhood vaccines and I talked about the bonuses. And when I left, there was a doctor in the wing and he said, oh, you didn't even hit, you just hit a fraction of what they make. They make far more than what you talked about, but I had to have proof of what I'm saying. Right. So I don't know exactly how much they make, but the proof that I have of the bonuses that they get are on the website, theamermayshow.com. Hit the resource tab, go to the childhood vaccines, and you could see just a fraction of the money they make. And they have to have X number of patients vaccinated.
Yep, fully vaccinated.
Don't get the bonus. Yep. And what I was going to ask you, Tracy, is, isn't it crazy to you, like, that there are still these doctors that are doing this, knowing that the patients definitely make a flip? Like, we go and think the doctors, and I don't want to paint all doctors as evil, but like, there comes a point when you as a pediatrician should think like, huh, maybe there's something that we're doing that is causing harm to these children. Like, you would think. But I know money kind of blinds us. And then we've all been indoctrinated that vaccines are the cure and saves humanity. So I guess it's hard when you're indoctrinated to vaccines cure everything. And then you see the money that maybe you don't want to see, that they're harming children. But I feel like at some point when you're a pediatrician and you have mothers like yourself coming in there and saying, my baby was this, and it's not just you. I mean, there's all kinds of moms coming in and talking about to their pediatricians and they fluff it off because it can't possibly be the vaccine. Like, it's crazy to me that the blinders are still there, that they're not realizing, and maybe they are and they just don't want to give up the money. I don't know. But you would have thought by now, as you've been in practice for a while as a pediatrician, realizing that there's harm coming to your patients, you would think that you'd kind of change the way you do things. I mean, didn't that ever cross your mind about like, well, they're seeing all these patients? Like,
oh, it did more than cross my mind. I mean, a little example of what my doctor did with Noah. So finally, after I never got an evaluation, a proper evaluation from Harbor Regional Center, I went through the school district, because over the age of 3, you can go through the school district to have your child evaluated for services. So it was a very well done evaluation. And at the time, although I I was still seeing, you know, the part of Noah that was prior to the age of one, fully functioning. And then I was also seeing that he had some stuff going on. So I don't think when I filled out all those different questionnaires that I was completely honest with myself on where he was currently at, right? So I was like, but he had this. And, but his preschool teacher, bless her heart, she wrote a letter to Harbor Regional Center, and they asked if there was somebody else who could fill out those questionnaires that experienced Noah, and she did. So she gave her open and very honest opinion, and I'm grateful for it. At the time, I was a little like, wow. But now that I think about it, I'm so blessed that she was so very open and honest.
Well, there's this heartbreak that's going on in your life. You know, you had this perfect baby, healthy baby, and something changed. And now your baby is hurting and is different. And there's this pain that goes along with your heart about, you know, you're broken for your child. You're hurting for your child because your child's struggling. And that's a total normal response of not wanting to fully admit on paper what the reality of how your son is currently. Totally normal. Because any mother would feel the same way. Any mother. Completely normal.
And I agree. So after that wonderful 3-hour evaluation, you know, it was 5 women. It was a child psychologist, a speech pathologist, a special education teacher, a physical therapist, and an occupational therapist. So all these wonderful women, you know, the therapist actually took Noah out and evaluated all his skills and everything while Steve and I answered all the same questions over and over again. And it was just all of this. So then they met for about 15, 20 minutes, and then they came back in the room, and she was so loving. And I was super grateful that, you know, she was like, I'm so very sorry to tell you, but we do find that Noah is autistic-like. So a school district cannot formally diagnose autism, so they have to use the words autistic-like. And not every, like, so typically it's a clinical psychologist that diagnoses. So anyways, they're like, but we're going to give him all his services. You know, he's going to start school here at Launch Preschool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at least he'll get his therapies and services here. And so, I mean, I sat there for a moment, like the word autism just kept ringing in my ears. Like, no, there's no way. I mean, my idea of autism was Dustin Hoffman's character in The Rain Man. And that wasn't how I saw Noah. So I on our way home, I had to stop by the office and pick up my computer. In walking down the hall, which I say there truly are no accidents, this amazing doctor, he was my naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joshua Burka, he was walking the other way and he saw me crying and he asked me what was wrong. And I looked at him and I'm like, no diagnosis of autism. And I just had like this blank stare and tears rolling down my face. And he backs up and he just looks at me in the eye and he's like, Noah's going to be fine. I want you to go home and I want you to do your research because kids are making great strides with biomedical intervention. And literally in that moment, it was like God put a fire in me that nobody ever could. So I sucked the tears back up into my eyes. I almost ran home. And I don't even remember, but I probably forgot my computer in the process. but I almost ran home to just, I'm like, let's go to the library, let's get some books, let's do this. You know, I was learning how to do different things. And in the process, that evaluation I was able to take to Harbor Regional Center, where Noah was formally diagnosed by a clinical psychologist. And you know, diagnosed with autism. But in the meantime, I had answers. So even though we might not like those answers, I had answers because I had beat my head up against a wall for 2.5 years asking this woman, what's wrong with my kid? And she couldn't tell me. So, and I wasn't the only parent. In my journey going to parent meetings and all these different T-talks and stuff, I had met other parents who had the same doctor, mm-hmm. same pediatrician, and she had done the same thing with them. And they had the same experience, their child regressing. My story is not, an original story. Mm-hmm. It is a story mm-hmm. of thousands upon thousands of parents mm-hmm. and families. And it's so sad. So I just, I had to learn in a very short time because there's a small little window that you have, for recovery to especially regain speech. So I had a small window to hurry up and get my PhD in how to heal my kid. So I became a self-learning nerd. And I, at that time, was in college for psychology, but I quickly dropped out because I think I was getting my own psychology lesson and that it just seemed like garbage to me. So I started learning about nutrition and health, and my naturopathic doctor also assisted me in finding the right functional medicine doctor for my son.
I'm a big believer in functional medicine. Huge.
Yes. So she assisted me and she ran all the tests, blood, urine, fecal, testing his gut, heavy metals, if there's something she could have tested my kid for, she did. So we started some supplementation. At first, some of it had to be via IV because Noah was so full of yeast from all the antibiotics. And so we had to heal the gut. And in the meantime, he was very nutrient deficient. So
what kind of supplements were you guys taking at this time?
So Noah needed to be on probiotics. He needed a good multivitamin. Vitamin D is super important. To tell you the multitude of supplements that Noah was on back then is kind of hard. So I used to have to, SAMI was one because that's for neurological function. GABA, because that helps with behaviors. So all these different things, I had to open up capsules, put in a little bit of juice and use my little latte thing and spin it. And then I would syringe it with, when he ate some food. Sometimes he'd throw it up. Sometimes he didn't. And, just however I could, I had to get these supplements in. And then he had quite a viral load. So she had put him on Veltrex as well. So here I was shaving the blue stuff off the Veltrex, crushing that as well. And this was every day.
A viral load. So he had a lot of viruses. Is that what you mean by viral?
So Epstein-Barr is one of those things that every human on the planet is plagued with.
Yes.
Unfortunately, when we start to get really high loads of Epstein-Barr and also strep, Noah was a PANDAS child. So when those strep levels get really high, they cause inflammation on the brain. So there's a number of things that Noah and myself have been plagued with. And so just addressing those things was number one. And we started with supplementation. At the time, we were struggling financially. So I bartered for treatments and therapies and his hyperbarics. I told them I would do their marketing. I'm like, I'll work your front desk. I'll even scrub your toilets if you really want me to. So I did. They gave me 40 sessions of HBOT for Noah.
And let me ask you this. How does hyperbaric help a child who is diagnosed with autism? How does that help even the regular body in general?
So What it does is when we breathe in oxygen, it only really gets to the surface. And when you're in a pressurized environment, and I heed a warning on hyperbarics for children, because if they cannot clear their ears, they should not be going into a hyperbaric chamber, because okay. it's easy to destroy an eardrum or both. So Noah had tubes in his ears. I didn't have to worry about him clearing his ears. So he just put the helmet on, went in the spaceship. But it increases blood flow to the brain. It forces, so in a pressurized environment, it forces the oxygen to those cells that don't typically receive it. So it's, you know, 100% grade A oxygen. He put on a helmet that literally looked like a space helmet. You know, cotton clothes, and we'd go into this big chamber, he and I, and, you know, after a while, so sometimes hyperbarics can bring things to the surface as to where at first it's like you might get more behaviors. And then over time, Noah's behaviors really started to, you know, diminish. And throughout this time, you know, we did some chelation. I definitely am not an advocate for IV chelation. I'm not. I believe it's too harsh. It was like my kid was receiving chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And then I did it. And literally, IV chelation going into your arm is excruciating. And I never knew, oh my gosh, this was the one thing I beat myself up on as a parent. I'm like, my kid is feeling that. That's insane. He would scream. And I'm like, oh, it's just because he's got a needle in his arm. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea. So there are less invasive ways to chelate. There are suppositories, there are capsules. You know, you can just put that in their little cocktail. There's so many, there's sprays, there's so much out there. And to me, I believe that, and there's so much more therapies developed like every day. I get a new something that comes across my desk, like all the time. But in this, you know, journey, I discovered what was best for Noah and what wasn't best for Noah. So years later, when I wrote the book, I was very clear as to how to proceed with caution on certain things, especially going to another country and even getting stem cell therapy, that sometimes it works. Like it worked for Noah, but for my fibromyalgia, it didn't work. But yet when I put Noah on the diet and I did everything he did, I started to feel better. So all my inflammation and joint pain was gut related. So I'm here to tell you all, it all begins in the gut. Everything begins in the gut. Every environmental glyphosate, you know, heavy metal toxins, all of it destroys your gut lining. And that's your, you know, those epithelial cells that are supposed to, you know, stay intact and just pull in, you know, vitamins and nutrients, but yet it's breaking down those epithelial cells where it creates gaps and you have leaky gut, then all the garbage is going into the bloodstream and acting as opiates on the brain. So you wonder why these kids have self-injurious behaviors, you know, that they have high tolerance for pain. You know, the food and all the garbage is kind of drugging up their brain. Mm-hmm. So it's really sad.
And everything that's not on the edge of the store has bioengineered food ingredients. Look at all your cereals, look at all the labels, and you're going to find constantly all the snacks, all the cereals, you're going to see bioengineered food ingredients. Why do we need to bioengineer all the food? I think God created food just fine. I don't think he needed help in that realm. And then, you know, thank God for Tennessee right now. In the state of Tennessee, they're labeling all the food that is mRNA induced. So just so everyone knows, they are putting mRNA in our food supply. And in the state of Texas, at least they've labeled it now. So now you could know, all right, I shouldn't go to get the mRNA food. I'm going to go to the organic section that hopefully doesn't have the mRNA food. So you're talking about something that's so critical and so important. And you know what? In medical school, they don't spend enough time on nutrition. They'll have a couple classes, but they really don't dive into nutrition.
They are required to have one nutrition class. That's it. One. And I could tell you that in the state of California, they're actually trying to pass a bill to prevent doctors from taking nutrition classes for continuing education, that they cannot take a nutrition class as continuing education. How sickening is that? So, and I know firsthand by living in California, you know, the do's and don'ts of what these doctors are allowed to do. And when you go back and I address like what you said earlier, why would these pediatricians do this? And I'm here to say they're not stupid. After COVID, if you don't see it, it's corporate greed. So to me, and I do understand that there is a form of brainwashing when they go through medical school. Mm-hmm. I have a cousin who's, you know, he's young and he just got out of medical school. His dad was a medical doctor. His father was like a father to me. And I remember when Noah got diagnosed with autism, he's like, don't even think about not vaccinating. And I'm like, oh, we're not going there. I love you, but I know what's best for my child, and God knows what's best for my child. And God always sent me angels. I have to tell you this story that you're going to find oh so fascinating, but it's something that I'm going to put out. It's going to be my next project, and I'm really excited to talk about it.
Right. So,
about 6 to 8 months ago, I signed up for coaching, for TEDx coaching, to do a TEDx talk, because I was like, oh, well, that would be really cool. A lot of my, you know, when I went to college, I watched TED Talks, right? You know, nutritional TED Talks, because I went to school for alternative medicine and I learned so much. And I'm like, okay, well, this was my version of a TED Talk. And so I'm going through this and, you know, we're putting together what an application looks like for TED. And, you know, I had to do a 1 minute video. A 1 minute video, a 1.5 minute video, and a 2 minute video. So we wrote all this stuff out, and a lot of it, I'm like, I don't like using the word neurodiversity. I don't like using, you know, there was some verbiage, and I'm like, this is very liberal. So I was like, but I paid a lot for this program. So we put out the applications. I got an approval to speak at a TEDx talk. Wow. In November, but I had to turn it down because I was speaking at Children's Health Defense event. So he's like, well, I'm doing another event in May and I really, really want you to do this. And I'm like, okay. So he even like picked the date because I'm gone every weekend except May 11th. And so as I've been spending the last month doing my TEDx talk, right, and typing it out, it has to be 10 minutes, has to be scripted, and it has to be memorized. So me and my coach are going through, and my coach is like, you can't have this. And I'm like, ugh. And he's like, and this sounds very robotic. You need to speak from the heart. And I'm like, listen, every time I hop up on stage, I speak from the heart. Mm-hmm. But I'm here to tell you that me speaking from the heart is not TEDx approved. Mm-hmm. I can't use the word God. I definitely can't talk about vaccine injury, dear God, mm-hmm. YouTube thing. And there's so much, I couldn't even talk about the nutrition and what it did for my kid. I couldn't talk about it. Intervention. I couldn't talk about nothing. I had to have a problem, a through line, and a solution. So my problem was how I felt when my kid was diagnosed with autism, right? And the helplessness and the despair and all of it, how all these flooding emotions come through and what parents go through. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, you need to speak to your audience. I said, okay. So I changed a little bit, speak to my audience. I told a little story about when Noah was, you know, first wanted to sign up for a talent show and I was freaking out. Mm-hmm. But yet when it was over, it was like, he stepped out on stage and like every parent, teacher, and student like stood and gave him a standing ovation, mm-hmm. like all this stuff, right? And then there was an end paragraph. And so he said, and you need to give them answers. You need to give them a solution. I said, okay, so what do you do when your kid is diagnosed with autism or any neurological disorder? And then I went through a few different steps and then I ended it with a paragraph. And that paragraph was if you want, it's really short. I could read it.
Yeah, please.
Let me just pull it up. But it's just crazy what they want from you.
Mm-hmm. Or what they won't let you say.
Yes.
The censorship of a TED Talk.
So this is what they made me remove. And this was the end. So even my TED coach said, this is good. Let's submit this. So he was having me take out whole paragraphs, which was crazy ridiculous. And he wanted me to take out the whole ending. And it was, this narrative illustrates the profound impact that a child with autism can have on their family, not only in terms of challenges, but also in terms of growth, resilience, and love. I am a proud autism mom, fiercely advocating for my son's needs and celebrating his every victory. Yet it is my son who has become my greatest teacher. Through his unwavering authenticity and unapologetic embrace of who he is, he has shown me that true courage lies not in masking our differences or conforming to societal norms, but in boldly embracing our unique identities and celebrating the beauty within ourselves. So he wanted me to remove that whole thing. And I was already back and forth, you know, arguing kind of with my TEDx coach. And then we finally get to a good place and I'm like, okay, I'm okay with this. And then the guy who's hosting the event, he gets to edit it as well. And then he took out literally, I kid you not, every single thing that was left that resonated with me. And I literally had a little bit of a meltdown and I said, it's okay. And my marketing guy, who's my nephew, so we run our office out of our home. He said, why do you care? And I said, well, I put so much time and effort and expense into it and now I don't get to do it. And he's like, why don't you? He said, we can go to a studio. We can record your TED Talk. We can do a YouTube version and we can do a Rumble version. And he said, and we can blast it out to hundreds of thousands of people mm-hmm. around the world. Because we, you know, we also have a marketing company. So I'm like, huh. So I reached out to the guy and I said, you know, I'm truly grateful for, you know, this opportunity, but I'm going to have to pass. And he's like, wow. I'm a little disappointed because, you know, I scheduled this event so I can actually have you there. And I don't understand why it is that you don't want to go. And I said, well, let me explain it for you. I will not be censored. And I don't believe that what I stand for is TEDx approved mm-hmm. in that this even works for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do my unapproved TED Talk. I'm going to go into a recording studio. I'm going to record the two versions and I am going to blast it out to the world. and people are going to be able to see. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to put God in it, because God deserves to be in my story and a part of my journey. So I'm not going to change too much, because I already like started memorizing half of it, which was that really got to me, because memorization, I go out on a stage and I just speak from spirit. I don't memorize. I don't script. I don't nothing. But to me, I still want it to look like a TED Talk, because I do want people to see the problem and then the solution. But I'm going to make sure that the world still gets to see my talk, but I don't have to be on a TEDx stage.
Right. So how do people find that speech?
How do people I am going to, so I have to memorize the rest of it. I have to rewrite it in with what resonates with me, because it's garbage. The ending was like my aha. And then I wasn't able to say anything about my book or anything else. So I am going to mention that, you know, I'm the author of, you know, Warrior Mom, A Mother's Journey in Healing Her Son with Autism.
Yes. I need to ask you about the God thing, because I feel as though God's really moving in this area, and I want to get your opinion since you've lived it. Do you see God moving in this area to heal children, to open the eyes of parents, to understand, to avoid the harms of the vaccine that caused autism? Like, where do you see God moving in this realm? Or do you see not see him at all moving in this realm?
I see God everywhere. So this is what I remember. Like right now, we're in very biblical times. And I know you know that. Like everything, even the war that's going on, you know, with Israel, and it's insane. And, you know, it was said in the Bible, and I'm not a Bible scholar. You know, I know bits and pieces, and I've studied a little bit. My husband's a bit of the Bible scholar. So a lot of times we'll have these discussions, and he'll educate me. That there was a time, and there were hard times. So if you think about like the times of Moses, and I think it as all these wraths of God, which there's so much of the Bible I don't believe in. I believe in an all-loving God. I don't believe that he's a vengeful God. But even as these wraths come and then they go, and Moses is like, why are you still doing this? And God says back to him, because life is not supposed to be comfortable. It is. So I believe in my heart and what I've learned, that this is our training ground. We are spiritual beings having a temporary human experience. What is it that you choose to do with that experience? Do you choose to just sit back and watch what's going on? Do you choose to be an advocate? Do you choose to stand up? You know, whatever it is that you choose, you know, that's going to be your mark. That's going to be the mark that you leave when you leave this earth. So even though me and my son agree to disagree, because he's a very liberal teenager, he knows I love him. But when I leave, it isn't just him that I'm protecting. It is all God's children that I want to protect. I walk around with my books all the time going through airports. I have a whole briefcase full of them. I will sign them and I will give them to any parent. So if I see a parent with a new baby or whatever, I will ask them, if I give you my book that I wrote, it's yours free. No strings. Would you read it if you knew that it could possibly save your child's life one day? So when somebody asks me, is God a part of this journey? Absolutely. God was everywhere in my journey. And then you have to be able to look at the hard times, no matter what those hard times are, of what can I learn from this? Mm-hmm. But, you know, life is still presenting hard times. No matter what, do you ever get a reprieve? You might get a little one, but somehow it just comes back around. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. You have to be okay with it. And then I think to myself, well, there are people that are much worse off than me in this world. So I always live from a space of gratitude. But be careful as to who you put your trust and your faith in. And I'm going to, you know, throw this out there. Many years ago, when I decided to become an advocate, you know, activist, right? I was like, honey, these bills are crazy. I think we should go to the Capitol. And I'm like, I don't want to look like one of those silly, you know, activists, but I feel compelled. Mm-hmm. That was where I first developed a relationship with Del Victory. Oh. That was where I first got to meet Bobby Kennedy in person. And then reoccurring, these same individuals kept showing up. So as much as I was a huge Trump fan, I know now that, like, I see that he's bought out by Big Pharma. His posts, his tweets, his everything is like, I did so good with Operation Warp Speed. I did, and then his inability to address the autism epidemic and the fact that he shut down small businesses when that was completely unnecessary. So then they all went out of business. Now, do I have a personal relationship with Bobby Kennedy? Yes. And I'm here to say that he has spent his life fighting for our well-being, cleaning up the environment. If you watch his like documentary, mm-hmm. he's fought every government agency and won several lawsuits. He's fought Monsanto, Big Pharma. He's won several lawsuits there. He created Children's Health Defense. So who do I want running my country? Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is like, we're in hard times.
Yeah.
It's as that election draws near, it's just going to get harder.
I have Robert Kennedy's Dr. Fauci book, and oh my gosh, that was a good book. I read that. There was so much good information there in that book. And I recommend anyone taking the real Anthony Fauci book, because that was really good. And I want people to get a hold of your book, because your book is so important for all of the parents out there. They can have another perspective on autism and what you've done for your son. And that's called A Warrior Mom, A Mother's Journey in Healing Her Son with Autism. And Tracy, it's been honestly an absolute pleasure to have you. Like, I couldn't wait to have you on my show. And I'm glad that it worked out. And I'm so glad you're here today. So thank you so much for being on my show.
All right, love. Well, you have a beautiful weekend, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Great. Hey, friends. New variants means new vaccines and even more scare tactics. You know, Dr. Peter McCullough gets asked all the time, how do I get this out of my body? Well, Spike Support Formula is the only product I've seen that contains ingredients researched to block and dissolve COVID spike protein in the bloodstream. Whether you've got the shot, you're watching research pour in about vaccine shedding, or you've had a bad bout of COVID, spike support is a serious concern. And while we won't truly know the extent of the devastating effects for many years, there is something you can do right now to protect yourself. Hundreds of people, vaccinated or not, have reported better mental clarity and increased energy levels. Head to twc.health/AmberMay to buy the wellness company's spike support formula and get back to feeling your best. Use promo code AmberMay at checkout and you will save some money. So that's twc.health/AmberMay to save some money at checkout. Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Socially Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.